Hello, everyone, and welcome to another bonus segment of Queens of the Bees, provided exclusively to our Patreon supporters. If you've already signed up for our Patreon, we very much appreciate it. As we always say, we don't mind doing this for free, but it always helps to have a little bit of extra money in the bank account. So for this fourth segment of November, I realize it's December when I'm releasing this, but it's counted toward our four bonus segments in November. I just want to talk briefly about the new Netflix film Tick, Tick, Boom, based on the play by Jonathan Larson and autobiographically about Jonathan Larson, most famous for penning the rock musical Rent, which of course has a lot of value and valence for the queer community in particular, given that it focuses on the AIDS crisis in New York City during the 1990s. So the movie, Tick, Tick, Boom, is about Jonathan Larson, who's being played by Andrew Garfield, and his attempt to stage his play Superbia, which is sort of a post-apocalyptic kind of futuristic musical, which, if it sounds strange, that's because it is. And so the musical that we are watching is about his attempts to get another musical staged. At the same time, you can also hear in a lot of the musical numbers, you can sense in the issues that it raises, some of the shadows and echoes of what will become more prominent when he releases Rent several years later. So that's sort of the summary of the film. It's not a particularly complicated movie because it's a musical, so you know what you're getting into. But I personally found it to be a very moving film, and a lot of that has to do with the performances. I know that Rent is not everyone's favorite musical. If you've encountered Jarrell on our podcast, you know that he's not the biggest fan of that particular musical, of Rent, or Jonathan Larson. But I do think that Garfield's performance allows us to see the rich humanness of his character and the way in which he's really struggling to accept the kind of vicissitudes that come along with being a creative. And maybe this film felt more resonant to me because I am a struggling creative. I'm not living in New York City, but I still am, you know, trying to make it as an independent writer. You know, and it's very hard sometimes to see other people attain success when you're languishing. And so maybe that's why it's resonant. But I also think that Garfield brings a very potent kind of sensitivity to the role. Now, I haven't always been the biggest fan of Andrew Garfield. I don't dislike him, necessarily. I just don't necessarily think he has a lot of star power or presence, perhaps. I mean, he was fine as the second Spider-Man, but he was no Tobey Maguire and he's no Tom Holland. But I digress. But he does do a very good job as Jonathan. And I think that he allows us to see many aspects of Jonathan's personality. Because let's be real, as a struggling playwright, Jonathan can be downright unpleasant sometimes, and he can be very insensitive to what other people are going through. That includes his girlfriend, who is an aspiring dancer and has her own professional goals that he doesn't seem to care much about. It also includes his friend Michael, and that is a person I want to focus on for a few minutes because, first of all, he's played by Robin De Jesus, who's sort of my Broadway boyfriend. So, Robin, if you're listening, just know that I've loved you ever since I saw you in SVU, and you're great in everything that you appear in. He is my favorite celebrity pocket gay. But I digress. So I really enjoyed the dynamic between Jonathan and Michael because it's the kind of gay male, straight male friendship that I think, if you've listened to the podcast, you know it always is one of my favorite things to see in pop culture, mostly because it's one of my favorite things to experience in real life. There is a special bond, I think, that exists between gay boys and their straight friends. And it helps that, you know, there's on-screen chemistry between Garfield and De Jesus that I think brings that out. But what makes Michael such an extraordinary character is that he is the conscience of this movie to some degree. Like, he's kind of the one who reminds Jonathan to get his head out of his ass when he's acting like a fool, which, honestly, is quite a lot of the time, because Jonathan just can't always realize that there is a world outside of his own wishes and desires. And so, you know, he could sometimes be a little bit self-centered. But, you know, Michael is someone who was recognized that he was a mediocre actor and so sacrificed his acting career to take up a career in advertising, if I'm not mistaken. And so he's become sort of a sellout. And so, again, you can see echoes of this that come up in Rent. But, you know, toward the end of the film, he admits that he's been diagnosed with HIV. And, you know, I mean, this is in an age in which, you know, we are a long way away from undetectable and the kinds of revolutionary health things that have occurred in the last 30 years. So it's not exactly a death sentence, but it's not very far from it either. And so that's one of the most moving moments, is when he tells Jonathan that that is what's going on. And so the two of them share that reunion. Now, obviously, this being a musical, it is the music that motivates so much of the plot. And I do think that there's something very powerfully and emotionally resonant about the music that goes beyond the narrative, and that helps explain perhaps why I found this film to be so resonant. Like, it's one of those movies that doesn't really relate to my life per se. Not that, you know, it's not that things have to relate to my life to be resonant, but I'm one of those people who tends to respond more to films when I feel or see something of myself in them, either in the person or in the narrative. Even straight relationships are sometimes evocative for me. But for some reason, the music in this just kind of called to me, and I don't know. I mean, and I'm not, I don't dislike Rent, but I'm not an aficionado of it either. And so I was trying to think, what is it about this that's calling to me? And I do think that there's something, as I said in my last post about Adele, I do think that sometimes there's something about music that goes beyond the logic and the appeal of narrative and the reason of narrative. Like, narrative helps us sort of cognitively make sense of what's going on in a movie, but music, as a lot of scholars have pointed out for some time, scholars like Richard Dyer and so forth, has in itself, in its being, I think, something uniquely utopian, something uniquely and richly emotional that goes beyond or exists alongside of. I'm not sure how one could put it really into words to capture exactly the dynamic that I'm trying to get across. But that's part of the reason that I found this movie to be so moving. And it is true also that Jonathan's story is intrinsically tragic. If you know anything about him, you know that he died of an undiagnosed heart condition on the night that Rent went live. So if you go into this movie recognizing that, it gives the title Tick Tick Boom even more potency, because the whole premise and the whole sort of driving problem for Jonathan is that he's 29 and is getting ready to turn 30 and has yet to hit, you know, a great success, which, you know, he constantly compares himself to Sondheim, who makes an appearance played by Bradley Whitford, and it takes Jonathan under his wing. And so he sort of is holding himself up to all of these, you know, exemplars of this of Broadway that achieves success at such a much younger age than he has. And so it's literally, it feels like his own mortality is closing in on him. And again, if you know his biography, that gives the film, you know, a sort of emotional punch that it doesn't have if you don't know that fact about him. Which there is a coda at the end that shows us this. And, there are the traditional images or, you know, sort of vignettes in the credit sequence that show the real Jonathan as he's acting on stage, which I think also helps add to the resonance and the power of what we're seeing. And, of course, it's worth pointing out that there are an embarrassment of riches when it comes to other members of the cast. Among other people, we have Judith Light as Rosa Stevens, who's Jonathan's agent, who, you know, is a little distant, but isn't also afraid to give him the tough love that he clearly needs to sort of bring him down to earth when it comes to success and what it looks like. And that's another reason I think this movie moved me so much, was whenever she tells him, you know, because Suburbia, or what is it, Superbia, attains success during a rehearsal. He thinks he's made it, but nobody wants to touch it and actually produce it. And so he's, you know, kvetching about this to his agent. And she says, look, you just got to keep throwing stuff at the wall until something sticks. Like, this, you didn't, you know, this was a success, but it's not the success that you need. And I mean, again, as a creative who's currently in that kind of space, I'm 38, or almost 38, not 29 anymore. I was like, okay, well, that checks out. That, you know, as a creator of a podcast, of writing, of whatever, you have to just keep trying, and it's gonna take a while, and there's no guarantee of success. But if it's what you love doing, then it's worth doing, no matter how exhausting and demoralizing the process can be. So maybe it's all of this, in other words, the combination of, you know, the queer icons of Robert Jesus and Judith Light, the evocation of Sondheim, who obviously just passed away last week as of when I'm recording this, the idea of Jonathan's own impending mortality, the art stuff, you know, all of that maybe is what makes it such a great movie, or at least appealed to me. And of course, there's two other things that are worth noting. One is its director, Lin-Manuel Miranda. If you know anything about me, you know that I'm a huge aficionado of Hamilton. What am I saying? Of Hamilton, which obviously thrust Lin-Manuel into international superstardom. So he has a sure hand as a director, and he knows what makes a movie work as well as he does what makes a play work. And so there is it's a really well put together movie. Like, it doesn't throw any surprises at you. I don't think it makes any sort of adventurous departures from traditional musical format, and that's okay. Like, I think that's fine. I think that we as a culture need to be accepting that sometimes a good solid musical or a good solid movie of any kind is a success. It doesn't have to be some sort of subversion of the genre, which is the thing that people fetishize. So that's what I enjoyed about that. The other was a moment in the diner where Jonathan is working. There's a sort of musical interlude where you have all the sort of Sunday regulars, and you have a cornucopia of wonderful Broadway stars, Andre DeShields, B.B. Newworth, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Chita Rivera of all people, Joel Grey, Renée-Elise Goldsberry, Philippa Sue, Felicia Rashad, Burnett Peters, as well as Adam Pascal, Daphne Rumavega, and Wilson Germain Heredia all make appearances. And so, you know, if you're a Broadway nerd, then that's itself pleasurable, just to see all these wonderful faces make an appearance in this movie. Obviously, it's just, you know, it's throwing something out there to the fans. And the fans, obviously, of Hamilton, who will recognize many of the people, and the fans of Rent, because the last three I mentioned are original cast members from Rent. So there's a lot there, I think, that's for those of us who adore Broadway and show tunes, which, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you probably do, because you're either a fag or someone fag adjacent. So, you know, you get it. So that's what I had to say about Tick, Tick, Boom. If you haven't already watched it, I would definitely recommend that you do so. It is a very fun film. It is deeply, like I said, emotional, and it'll leave you probably teary-eyed at the end. I'm not sure if it's for me, it wasn't a sob kind of musical, but it was a get-choked-up kind of musical, but that's most musicals anyway. So anyway, that's what I have to say about Tick, Tick, Boom, and thank you for joining me for this little vignette. As always, we definitely appreciate all of you who listen to our regular show or listen and donate to our Patreon. We really couldn't do this without all of you and all the love that you give us, both in the ratings that you give us on Apple, but also when you talk to us in person or you contact us on social media. We, Mark and I, definitely very much appreciate all of the support that you've all given us. So thank you very much for that. And we will see you soon with another bonus update and, of course, our bi-weekly episodes. Thanks again. Goodbye.